Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm very glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to say there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. Very excited to have Paul Kelly joining us on the podcast today. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Ken. How are you going?
So far, so good. How are you?
Very good, thanks. It's talking to you from Melbourne, where I live. And it's morning time here.
And we're recording this, and I'm in southern Florida, and the sun has set, and it's nighttime here. And that is amazing. We live in technological, wonderful times now. You've had an amazing career, 28 studio albums, 60 singles, 42 videos. You've contributed to 10 soundtracks and scores. 11 of your albums were top 10. And at this point, you've decided to do a Christmas album. What led you down that path?
I've always liked Christmas, and it's been a big thing in my family since we were children. You know, I come from a big family, big Catholic family, so we always celebrated Christmas. And over the years, as we've grown up and scattered and lived in different places, Christmas was always a way of us getting back together. And there's a lot of Christmas music I like. I think one of the things about Christmas music is that it's so diverse. You have a lot of sacred music, carols, you have serious carols and fun carols. There's all kinds of songs about Christmas. Christmas is a blend of many different traditions. So it's thrown up a lot of music over the years. In some ways, it's thrown up so much music that we often can't, you know, miss the gems out of all the dross. I mean, so, but there's a lot of great Christmas music out there. And I started thinking about doing an album a few years back, and just started recording a song here and a song there. And then early this year, we went to the studio and, you know, did most of the songs then. And the idea of the record was to do it with a number of different guests. Again, because of the variety of the music that we were doing, it needed a variety of voices.
And this is quite a huge, I don't want to even call it an album, a collection. You've got 22 songs on this. How did you whittle it down or pick and choose what you were going to record?
It probably was less of a whittling down more than an expanding. You know, I originally thought I'd do a single album, but then once I realized we had this, of all the songs I was looking at and that I thought that'd be good to record, I realized it was, had such, so many of the songs were quite different to each other. I thought it would only make sense on a bigger canvas. So we have got a gospel song like Virgin Mary Had One Son. We have some ancient carols. Coventry Carol was from the 16th century. We have straight up pop songs like Christmas Baby, Please Come Home. We've got, you know, some folk songs like The Friendly Beasts. And all these come out of the different traditions of Christmas. So I quickly realised that to make things hang together, I needed to stretch it out into a double album, and that's how it ended up with 22 songs. But you're right, could have done a whole lot more. So there's always the chance of somewhere down the track doing another album.
That's a question I probably was going to hit you with later on. It is a really amazing mix of songs. You've got Silent Night and Little Drummer Boy. You have the song from the Phil Spector Christmas album that you mentioned. You have religious songs and hymns and classical songs, and there's rock on there. It really is. It's a fun Christmas party. It really is, because that's what, you know, if you get all your friends over to have a Christmas party, it's lots of different kinds of music. So it really is, it does have that element to it.
Yeah, that was what I wanted to bring that across, that just to have fun with it. I wanted it to be a fun record. I think, yeah, sequencing was interesting, because, you know, there was some quiet ones and some real straight out rock and roll songs. But that's the fun of it. There's one person I think was really crucial to the record is the singer and songwriter and instrumentalist, Alice Keith. She appears, you know, she's on Silent Night and Three Drovers and Intonent Hodie, which is a 14th century Latin hymn about St. Nicholas, the precursor of Santa. She's on Coventry Carol as well. She's like this the sprite, the spirit of the record that sort of helps pull it all together. Because she's had classical training, but she also plays banjo and folk music. And she's a bridge between a lot of these worlds. So, for instance, we did Coventry Carol, which is, you know, usually with a done sort of much more formally and chorally and with more singers, but we did it with the main part done by three women singers. So they were singing, it's a classical, it's a piece from the classical repertoire, but we moved it a bit into probably more into our realm. So and Alice was crucial to that, to helping sort of bring the diverse elements together.
You have lots of guests on this album. It's a wide variety of artists. You even have a children's choir. Was this the vision that you had from the beginning for your Christmas Train album, or is this something that sort of evolved into a group effort?
I'd say it evolved. You know, I like to work pretty collaboratively and to stay open to things happening or things occurring. The song you mentioned with the children's choir was a Maori version of O Holy Night. So yeah, on this record it's called Tapu Te Po. O Holy Night, you know, one of my favourite Christmas songs. So that I had that earmarked to do, and I approached Marlon Williams, a New Zealand singer, who just has this glorious voice. And I always wanted him to do that song. And when I approached him about it, he said, "That's my favourite song." So I thought, well, I picked the right person there. And it was he who suggested, "I'd like to do this." Well, he said, "I've sung it in many languages," because, again, he's used to sing in choirs when he was a kid. So he sung it in French. He sung it in Maori. And he said, "I'd like to sing it in Maori." So I said, "Yeah." And he said, "And it'd be good to have a children's choir with this." And his original, so he did a little demo of it, and he sort of sang in falsetto his idea for the children's part, which we took and adapted. So again, that's sort of responding to the way that Marlon wanted to do the song. Unfortunately, he couldn't get to Australia because of COVID restrictions. So we recorded the song in Melbourne in the studio. We were copying his little demo, little phone demo, and then sent back our studio recording to him, and he sang it in New Zealand. And then we brought it back here and put the choir on. So it's one of those across the oceans recordings.
Yeah, I've heard from so many people who, because of the pandemic, recording things has gotten to be almost like putting together a big puzzle where different people are recording different things and then they send them to you and you patchwork them all together. And thank God for technology. It works out wonderfully. I'd like to talk about How to Make Gravy. The song just had its 25th birthday, if I did the math right, was yes. Nominated for Song of the Year 2 years in a row in 97 and 98. And that just doesn't happen to Christmas songs. What was the story behind How to Make Gravy getting that up and getting that out there?
Well, I was initially asked to take part in a Christmas charity record where a number of different artists, you know, do Christmas carols or Christmas songs for charity. And I chose Christmas Must Be Tonight by the band, you know, Robbie Robertson wrote it. Mm-hmm. And but it was already taken. So then the organizer asked me if I wanted to try and write a Christmas song of my own. So I thought, okay, I'll give it a shot. I mean, I think my thinking was every songwriter should try and write a Christmas song at some stage. So I thought I better do that. And I sort of, mulled it over for a while and was thinking, well, how am I even going to get into this? There's been so many Christmas songs done. I mean, does the world really need another Christmas song? And then I had the idea that maybe the best way to write about Christmas was from the point of view of someone who can't be home for Christmas. And as soon as I had that thought, my next thought was, well, why can't they come home? And then I thought, oh, they're in prison. So that sort of gave me the key to writing the song. The song set in prison doesn't have a chorus. So it's sort of, I didn't expect it to be really a popular song, but it's one of those songs that sort of became more popular over time.
Was it a hard sell as a Christmas song with no chorus and that is set in prison?
No, well, we just put it out. I mean, that's sort of the way I work. We just put songs out and then they have a life of their own. It's not much apart from the initial, around the time you put it out initially, maybe there's a bit of promo and press or whatever, but after that, it's the song's on its own. It does its own thing, and that's what happened to that song. It's also a song that was a really good song to play live. It's got its own inbuilt gear change. I don't know how that happened, but it just did. So we've been playing it in our set, for 25 years, and it's sort of one of the songs we always play. The band like playing it. It always gives us a lift. And audience seem to respond really strongly to it.
Did I hear right that, at least in part, it was inspired by Irving Berlin's White Christmas?
I have written about the similarities, but it was more I realized after I'd written it. So, as I said, the way that I wrote the song was thinking about, well, someone can't be there. Someone can't be there. That's how I'm going to, why can't they be there? So, and I realized not long after that I'd written it that's what happens in White Christmas by Irving Berlin. And it's more evident on Darlene Love's version, where she says the opening words. The song was written with a little, I guess, an intro, as a lot of the songs at that time were. It's a beautiful day in old LA, the orange and palm trees sway, but it's December the 24th and I'm longing to be up north. So that sets the scene where the narrator of that song is in a completely different place from where they want to be. They're in thousands of miles away from where they want to be. So I realise that's what gives that song so much power, is that the singer's longing to be somewhere else, not where they are. And then you buy a car and then you start, when you drive around, you start seeing that the same kind of car everywhere you go. You start to notice it. So really, I mean, that's a lot of Christmas songs work that way. I mean, you could say it's a genre of Christmas song, the Christmas song where the person can't be home. Christmas just ain't Christmas with the one you love. So a lot of Christmas songs have that longing to be there, but the person can't be there.
And in the song, you've done something that not a lot of songwriters have done. Bon Jovi has Tommy and Gina. David Bowie had Major Tom. And you have Jack, the narrator of the song, who I believe this is the third time he's shown up in one of your songs. Is that right?
It's Joe. Hello, Dan. It's Joe here. Sometimes through some of my songs, I sometimes imagine it's the same sort of person. It's not that definite, but I have there's a song called To Her Door, and then another song called Love Never Runs on Time, and this one, How to Make Gravy. The protagonists in those three songs, they could be the same guy. I'm not saying they are, but they could be.
Similar point of view, at least, anyway.
Yeah, a guy that's, he's people like him. He's got a big heart, but he doesn't always dumb things. That's another one. Dumb things. That's a lot of dumb things. So, yeah, maybe he's in a few more songs.
Any idea if Joe's going to get a happy ending at some point?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's only in the song in How to Make Gravy. He's getting out it 6 months later. So he's got his chance to get his life back on track. I mean, I'd like to write, it'd be good to write a sequel to this song. It's been around for 25 years. And I'd like to write maybe the story or, you know, further on down the track, the story from Rita's point of view, because Rita's his wife or loved one or partner. And in the song, he's concerned that his brother Dan might and Rita might, you know, might get together. So there is definitely a setup for a sequel if I could just manage to write one. But these things sort of they happen generally by accident rather than by design. So just hoping the lightning will strike at some stage.
How different is the version of How to Make Gravy that's on Paul Kelly's Christmas Train from the original that you recorded 25 years ago?
It's not very different. I mean, but then I've sort of lost touch with the original one, I guess, because it's a song we've played live for so long that it's, you know, you sort of develop different ways and singing it and slightly different turns of phrase. But I think it's pretty close because it's just all the parts in that song, they're sort of interlocking. You know, the bass line is the same, the little slide riff that starts the song off, which was played by Spencer Jones, who's no longer with us, but we always have that part in the song. And because there's a lot of words in that song and they have to sort of be sort of in the right place to keep the song moving. So I think it's very similar. It's quite similar to the original version, but maybe other people would notice the differences more than I.
And I think I saw an interview with you recently about this, that the recipe for gravy in there is real.
That's a real recipe. It's from my first father-in-law. And I use it. You know, I have copped some criticism from the foodies around the place or gourmet eaters that think that you shouldn't put tomato sauce into a gravy recipe. But, you know, I think when I say tomato sauce, it's what I mean, what you call ketchup. It's that's what it is. But you don't put very much in, like I said, you just put a dollop. And also, it's not compulsory. You can leave it out if you want.
Family, of course, is a big theme. And when you were recording Little Drummer Boy, you actually had your family taking part. How was that to work with them?
Oh, that was great. Little Drummer Boy is always on our list of Christmas carols that we do. We have a family tradition of doing Christmas carols on Christmas Eve, you know, with whoever's around, my siblings and all their children and their children's children. So it's quite a large mob. It's just funny. It's the younger ones that really love it. So that's why we kept the tradition going, because the kids love doing it. We always do Little Drummer Boy, and my sister Mary Jo, who's just a year younger than me, she's a music teacher, plays keyboards. So she usually runs the show. We print out, you know, be about 15 carols and 15 to 20 carols, and we stumble our way through them, you know, not very reverentially.
Is there anything about the Christmas Train album that we haven't hit on yet that you want to make sure people know?
I wanted to have songs on there that represented the other two, what I would call, you know, the one God religions, the monotheistic religions, Judaism and Islam, because they have strong links to Jesus and the life of Jesus. Islam, well, the Quran has a whole chapter devoted to Mary, mother of Jesus. It's called Surah Maryam, and there's beautiful poetry in there about that the story of the angel appearing to Mary and saying she's going to have a son, and she saying, you know, really, I haven't been with a man. How can I have a son? I mean, it's just, it's very similar to the story in Luke in the Bible. So I thought, well, that's, you know, that's, I'd like to have something to represent that on the record. And I've got a friend of mine, Waleed Ali, who's a well-known writer and philosopher and TV and radio presenter here in Australia. So he read an English translation of it that's on the record. And also Jesus was Jewish and steeped in Jewish law and scripture. And I wanted to have a song that spoke to that. Now, I ended up settling on a song called Shalom Aleichem, which is an all year round song. It's sung. It's a prayer sung at Shabbos, you know, every Friday night. But the lyrics translated to, you know, the lyrics talk about peace, and kings, and angels. So I thought, you know, that really fits well with Christmas. So I asked a singer in Melbourne here, Lior, who has a beautiful voice, and to sing it. So they were both a bit puzzled at first to be asked to be on a Christmas record, but they were really good sports.
Was there any, and you've kind of touched on this, but was there any song or were there songs that you really wanted to include that for whatever reason just didn't work out?
No, I can't think of any. Everything we sort of tackled turned out well. So, I mean, there are songs that there are definitely plenty of other songs could do, like I said, down the track. So I haven't really put my mind to that yet.
So now that this is out there and it's a 22-track Christmas album called Paul Kelly's Christmas Train, what's next? And I hate to ask that because this is a huge release. Do you just take a little time and breathe and enjoy the holidays, or do you already have something lined up?
We've got a lot of touring lined up, so no more recording for a while. I'll just let that sit for a bit. We've got some shows before Christmas. Well, we've just opened up down here. I live in Melbourne. We've had a long lockdown, but we're opening up. We've got some shows in December, and then we have a whole lot of shows next year that are shows that we postponed from this year. So quite a few shows that we were supposed to do this year, we couldn't do because of the pandemic. So next year is going to be a fair bit of touring, and then we're hoping to get back to the States and Europe after that. So I think that 2022 is pretty mapped out.
For the shows that are coming up in December, are those going to be Christmas shows? Are they going to be a mix of things? Or do you even know yet?
We usually do some regular shows shows at the end of the year towards Christmas time, but they're not Christmas, specifically Christmas shows. But this year we will be doing, you know, maybe half a dozen songs from the record as part of the normal set. We do a pretty long show, like a two-hour show. So we won't be doing the whole record, but we'll have about half a dozen songs. So it'll have a little bit of a Christmas bent to it this year.
Well, I know on your YouTube channel there are lots of concert performances. Hopefully some of these will make it on there. What is the best way for people to connect with you? Is it through your website, or is there a particular social media site that you like more than others?
Well, we have. I'm on Facebook and Instagram, and I sometimes post directly there myself, and sometimes the team, what I call Team PK does, which is management and so on. So the best place to find out what's happening is through Facebook, Instagram, and the website and YouTube. So we've been putting up short little clips of the making of this record of Christmas Train over the last month, and then we're continuing to do that. So you can go there and see little trailers of live in the studio. So usually when we record, a friend of mine, Andy, a cameraman, comes in and just does fly on the wall filming, you know, a few days here and there. And he just, it's always pretty random what he's going to catch. But he caught some good stuff from the recording sessions last March. And you can see those little clips on YouTube. And we also put them up, let people know about them through the socials. Facebook and Instagram.
You can find links to Paul's YouTube and his social media sites on his website. It's a great hub to see what's going on and also connect all the other places. It's paulkelly.com.au. Thank you so much, Paul. I'm really enjoying the album. I hope everybody else is enjoying it too. and I'll keep an eye out for some concert stuff on YouTube.
Thanks very much, Ken. My pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening, helping us share some Christmas spirit, and for helping this podcast continue to grow. Since you're listening to us now, you've obviously found us somewhere. But if there's another site you like to use for podcasts, check out our podcast page on our website for the complete list of everywhere you can listen to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. And again, the website is www.soundsofchristmas.com. Then just click on the podcast tab. For the Sounds of Christmas station, to listen to the music, you'll need to stick with our website or our app in the Google Play Store. If you have comments or suggestions, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through our website. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.